encouragement initially as we look at this plague is really clear. God doesn't forget one cry of his people. God hears you. This is why he's inviting us to pray to him. You don't have to go to Pope or priest. You can go right there. And he wanted everyone to know, you don't know who you're messing with.
Boil, boil, toil, and trouble. Hi there. Welcome to Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. We're continuing our survey of Exodus right smack dab in the middle of our plagues series. These 10 plagues are designed by God to reveal to us a variety of things, and they are very poignant for us today as New Testament believers. Join us as we take a look at Plagues, Part 6, Boils. Ooh, yeah, that's gotta hurt. Why and what for? Well, here's Pastor Chris to explain on today's edition of Abounding Grace.
Exodus chapter 9, beginning at verse 8. Let's give our attention this morning to the word of the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take handfuls of soot from the kiln and let Moses throw them in the air in the sight of Pharaoh. It shall become fine dust over all the land of Egypt and become boils, breaking out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. So they took soot from the kiln and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses threw it in the air, and it became boils, breaking out in sores on man and beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils came upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. But the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not listen to them, as the Lord had spoken to Moses. May the Lord bless this morning the hearing of his word. It is remarkable to me how many times the scriptures pose the question, who is able to stand? It uses that word stand before the Lord. You'll remember when the ark was taken into Philistine territory in the book of 1 Samuel, and the Lord had plagued the Philistines with tumors of rats, remember, on their bodies. And the ark then came out and it went back to Israel. And remember, the men of Beth Shemesh looked into the ark, which they knew they shouldn't have done, and immediately many of them died. But the great question came out, who is able to stand before the Lord, this holy God? There it was. You'll remember in the book of Revelation at the very end, actually in Revelation 6, that after the series of plagues and after all these things that happened, the question again comes out, the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Who is able? I believe that question is what the plague is leading us to this morning. In a sense, we really do in the sixth plague get to the heart of the matter in the book itself. We're seeing all these themes come together, and it's progressing in teaching us this as Revelation progresses. We see this morning, particularly in the sixth plague, who at the very end of this plague, we read that all the wise men, the holy men, the magicians, in verse 11, could not stand before Moses. That wasn't just because of the boils. It was because they had no ability to stand anymore before God's holy prophet. It was done. We're done with the magicians after this plague. They can't come back before Moses. They don't have the ability to come back before Moses. And the Lord was teaching us something in this about his deliverance for Israel, that he was ultimately bringing a people, and this is what Hebrews picks up about the Exodus, he was bringing a people near to him. A people near. And Israel had to grapple with that question. Israel had to answer that question. How do we have the ability to stand before the Lord our God, which is what the Philistines asked? How do we have that ability? And this morning, as we see the story of salvation developing and we see the whole picture being brought to us here, the Lord teaches us and shows us his love again to make Israel for them a way that they can be brought near. A way that they can know his shining face. A way that they can know his blessing. But we also see how awful it is to be against the Lord God. We also see how terrible it is to stand against him. For you'll never ultimately be able to stand before his holiness on that day. So this is what we're looking at this morning. As we open up the sixth plague, we come to what seems to be a sort of confusing section, something that's odd, something that's interesting, mysterious to us. If you look at verse 8, it captures it right out of the gates. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take handfuls of soot from the kiln and let Moses throw them up in the air in the sight of Pharaoh. It shall become fine dust over all the land of Egypt. A strange plague. What a strange moment. You know what it means? There's no announcement to this plague, which makes it all the more powerful in some ways. Moses is told, after all this announcement, after all this saying, let them go, now Moses is told, you walk in right before Pharaoh and you say nothing. You don't say a word. Can you imagine that? Here comes Moses and Aaron with the staff. Pharaoh looks up. Uh-oh. Not a word is said. Walks up, not a word, and he reaches down into this kiln. And he grabs, the imagery is he grabs with both hands and he scoops up two big scoops of black soot. And he hurls it up into the air. You know what would happen. It would be a big plume of black smoke that would then happen. Ash. I'm imagining that. Right in front of Pharaoh. He sees this big cloud of black smoke goes up and it just keeps going and going and going and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden, as Pharaoh's looking up into the heavens, it is, the right time we can use this word, transubstantiated to dust. And this cloud of soot then drops back down in really fine dust upon all the land of Egypt. Fine dust. Now, before we get to the meaning of this morning, what happened, we really do need to understand why God chose to do this. That can be determined. Why God chose to do this. God does nothing that's just out there for no rhyme or reason. God is very intentional. We've seen that in these plagues. God is aiming at specific things. When we think about that, we can put some of this together and realize that Pharaoh was out somewhere. Pharaoh was out somewhere. And what we gather here is that Pharaoh was out at all the altars of worship in Egypt. Generally, on these altars in Egypt, sacrifices were being made. What they would do in their daily routines is that they would, the magicians especially, they were priests, they would go out to these altars and they would try to appease certain gods. They would try to appease certain gods, and especially the god Typhon, who is known as the evil principal in the earth. So if you put this together, Egypt is really feeling the heavy hand of the Lord. Pharaoh's really experiencing the heavy hand of the Lord upon him, as we looked at last time. And so the Egyptians are now out there with Pharaoh trying to propitiate the evil principal. You know what they would do? They would take a big handful of ashes and they would throw them up in the air as a sign of blessing to their God. Who's standing there? Pharaoh, all of his cabinet, all of his wise men, and the magicians. And they're performing this. We have prayers recorded. We know what they said. O creator God Noom, I call unto thee, my father Noom. I'm in the midst of foes. All have joined themselves against me, and I am alone. Moses, I want you to walk out when he's doing that. I don't want you to say a word. This is really powerful imagery. I want you to go down and I want you to take some soot, and I want you, if for him, to cast it up just like he's doing right on up into heaven. Next to these altars, at least within range of sight, were kilns. Kilns. What were kilns used for? Well, we know kilns were used for making bricks. Kilns were everywhere in Egypt. 400 years, God's people had stood before those kilns. Think about it. 400 years, God's people had stood before those kilns. How many people died at those kilns? How many people were whipped and oppressed and beaten at those kilns? Kilns were the symbols of Israel's altar. What do I mean? Imagine all the tears. Imagine all the prayers that went up for 400 years. Imagine all the cries that went up. Imagine all the bodies that were burned at those kilns. To give you some sense of this, I don't think we capture it well. They, to the older brothers and sisters, they had no retirement in Egypt. How many of the elderly do you think in their 90s were forced to go out there and make bricks? How many do you think died? They didn't have child labor laws. How many children? You just can't help but to think a little bit about something like Auschwitz. It's the thing that came to my mind. That place housed 8 gas chambers and 46 ovens that could dispose of 4,400 bodies a day. When I think of Auschwitz, you know what I think of? Ashes. That's exactly what comes into people's minds when they think of Auschwitz. The language of Exodus is extreme. They, and I quote, inflicted them with hard bondage. Here is an ancient text which describes an Egyptian master traveling down to the Nile to look at his slaves and what they were producing, inspecting the slaves, and I quote, "Now the scribe lands on the shore." This is the master. He surveys the harvest. Attendants are behind him with staffs, Nubians with clubs. One says to him, "Give grain." There's none. He is beaten savagely. He is thrown in a well, submerged, head down. His wife is bound in his presence. His children are in fetters. End of quote. The bondage was so great. I don't think we get there unless we sense this and understand this, that even when the Passover was being instituted, when the Passover was being given, they were taught to say something to future generations. They were taught to repeat something to future generations. The Lord told the parents, "This is part of your training duty. You continue to say this, and here's what I want you to say." And the Egyptians treated us harshly and humiliated us and laid on us hard labor. Then we cried to the Lord, the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. And the Lord brought us up out of Egypt with a mighty hand, last time, and an outstretched arm. That's what he did. You tell future generations about this. You make sure they understand this. Now, Pharaoh stands there crying out to his gods with ashes of sacrifice. As this is happening, Moses walks up to the kilns, which I'm assuming many of God's people's ashes are in there. And he casts them up into heaven. 400 years of cries, 400 years of tears, 400 years of persecution. They were the people of Christ. Think of it. Every moan, every cry, every prayer request went up to heaven. Moses gives a visual of that. That's what I believe this is. Moses gives a visual. Moses gives an object lesson of that. And he's here showing us something, that those prayers went right up on, those cries went right up on into heaven. You say, well, where do you get that? Revelation 8. Another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer, and he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne, and the smoke of the incense, black smoke, with the prayers of the saints rose up before God from the hand of the angel. These are the prayers of the saints. You know what happened? Well, this. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire, and threw it back to the earth. And there were peals of thunder and rumblings, flashes of lightning and an earthquake. What was one of the judgments that came down? It's this. So the first angel went and poured out his bowl on the earth, and harmful and painful sores came upon the people who bore the mark of the beast and worshipped its image. It wasn't carrying around a little 666 number. It was being identified with Satan and his kingdom and Pharaoh. This is all borrowed. The language of Revelation is using that garb of the Old Testament to explain something that we can take real comfort in, that this black soot went up, it became a giant cloud in the heavens, and then in Pharaoh's eyes, all of a sudden, it becomes fine dust, and it drops back on them, and all of a sudden, painful boils break out on all their bodies. Fire came back down. Boils. To which you should all be thinking, dust? A message in dust? That had everything to do with the curse, didn't it? That the serpent would lick the dust after he had fallen. That to dust you are and to dust you shall return. And the encouragement initially as we look at this plague is really clear. God doesn't forget one cry of his people. God hears you. This is why he's inviting us to pray to him. You don't have to go to Pope or priest. You can go right there. He'll hear you. And he wanted everyone to know, you don't know who you're messing with. It was that kind of encouragement that the Lord gave when he was standing on earth. And he said, listen, men ought to pray always and not lose heart. Why? Well, there was this little widow who kept crying out about all the injustices that she was having in her life, and especially this one particular sin. She just kept praying and praying and praying, and finally she kept bothering this unjust judge. Finally he said, I'm tired of her wearying. I'm just going to answer her to get her off my back. The Lord says, do I ever treat any of you like that? I'm going to avenge my elect speedily. I'm going to throw back fire quickly. That was the encouragement. And it seemed as if for all these years, nothing had happened. Nothing was going on. It seemed that God had been silent, that God had not delivered his people, that God had abandoned his people. And here now Pharaoh gets the visual. I didn't abandon them at all. He hears them. He receives your cries. And I say the most practical point, don't stop praying. Don't lose heart. In all of your discouragements and all of the hardships and the seeming defeat, he is calculating, he'll measure it back. He'll give it back. Now God has calculated it all, demanding a reckoning, and here comes the recompense. We read that this dust fell on their bodies and it became boils. I don't know if in Western society we're as accustomed to this because of our medicine. I was, again, been so fascinated, strangely enough, with the Black Death of the 14th century. And the Black Death eventually was given the name adopted of that name because of what happened on people's bodies were these black boil-like plague boils. They were black boils that showed up on people's bodies. They called them strange swellings, which were followed by fevers and chills and vomiting and diarrhea, terrible aches and pains, and then in short order, death. The Black Death was an awful thing that happened. Indiscriminately, they called it contagious. Boccaccio said, the mere touching of the clothes appeared to itself to communicate the malady to the toucher. The disease, he said, was terrifyingly efficient. People who were perfectly healthy, one night would go to bed, and in the morning they'd be dead. Read it. It wiped out a third of Europe's population. In Egypt, the common suggestion, and this is why the sermon is tough, I understand. Who wants to hear about this? I don't want to hear about this. But it's reality. The The problem in Egypt, they say, was known as a kind of skin anthrax. One described the plague that in history and whatever form the plague took as it became known as the plague, it takes the form first of a big swelling on the affected part of the skin. After 2 or 3 days, there appears to be a small bluish-red pustule with a central depression in the middle of the swelling. This depression dries up and new boils shoot up. The first plagues were just annoying, weren't they? Frogs. The Nile. Have you noticed this is getting a lot more personal? What was the Lord confronting? Well, the Egyptians were obsessed with medicine. The Egyptians were obsessed with healing. Closely connected with their medicine was their religion. You can see this in most ancient countries and peoples, that they tied these things together. They would pray endlessly to their gods for healings from all the diseases and the sicknesses. So you had about 4 major gods in Egypt that they would cry out to. Amun-Ra, which you've probably heard of. They have uncovered a tablet that showed and depicted him as a healer. A physician who heals the eye, they said, and dispels ailments. A physician who heals the eye without having remedies. Opening the eyes and driving away the squint, rescuing whom he desires. He makes a lifetime long or shortens it. Amun-Ra.
Yeah, so we're seeing that you can only set up your own gods for so long before God, the God, comes along and just topples them. Pastor Chris will be back in just a moment here on today's broadcast of Abounding Grace Radio. Our time together today found in Exodus, our series called The Plagues. To obtain a copy of today's program or the entire set, we would invite you to call or write to us here at Abounding Grace. 888-504-8805 is our number. You can write to us at Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Another way to reach out to us, also learn a bit more about us and who we are, would be through our website, agradio.org. Abounding Grace is also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and links to those sites are, again, at our website, agradio.org. You'll also find recent blogs, vlogs, and other information, as well as past programs, all housed at agradio.org. As we close out our time together today, we also would like to let you know that we do have a special running throughout the series here on the plagues, How to Pray. Have you ever found yourself challenged about your prayer life, wish it could be more than it is? Well, recently, Pastor Chris has gone through a series called How to Pray. It's an amazing series that we are making available on a thumb drive. That's right, a thumb drive. For a gift of $15 or more, we'll send this thumb drive your way. It contains all of the messages in this series. Again, on a convenient thumb drive that you can place into just about any device that will take an MP3. Again, for a gift of $15 or more, when you reach out to us, we'll send you this wonderful resource on prayer. Reach out to us again at 888-504-8805 or by writing to us, Abounding Grace, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264, or drop us an email when you visit us online at agradio.org. As promised, once again now, to close out the broadcast with a look ahead tomorrow, here's Pastor Chris.
Do you see what God's assaulting? The Egyptians had harmed his people. And what is the Lord declaring? I hold your lives. You don't hold your lives. You realize he holds every single life, every single heartbeat in his hand. I was just reading of a girl this last week, swimming in a pool, and the heart just stopped, 16 years old. He determines the boundaries of where you live. He determines how long you're going to be here. You don't hold your life. Boils covered their bodies. What did it do? Here's what it did. It confronted them with their own mortality.
More on this plague of boils tomorrow on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday.
That's right, Chris, we would. And our worship services, because of the heat and earlier darkness, begin 9:30 for the morning service and 3 p.m. for the evening service. And both are held under the tent at Calvin Christian. Well, here's Pastor Chris once again. If you'd like to know more, with information on how to reach out to us,
you can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.